All right, special edition of Colchonero Chat today on this Sunday afternoon, at least where I am. I'm Jeremy. I'm joined by Scott Coyne of the Belgian Football Podcast. How are you, Scott?
I'm great, Jeremy. It's great to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Really excited about this. A pretty cool collaboration we're doing here with our new friends at the Belgian Football Podcast. How long have you guys been recording your show?
Well, we are the number one English language podcast covering all of Belgian football, and we're in our third season at the moment, and things have just been growing really, really quickly for us. There's a lot of interest in the Belgian Pro League, in the English language speaking world anyway, and a lot of people who kind of keep a very close eye on the kind of big five leagues in Europe, Spanish League being one of them, La Liga. We'll also know their Belgian football reasonably well, as it's very heavily scouted by, you know, all the sides in the top five leagues as well. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic stopping off spot for Belgium for players who are perhaps coming from Africa or Asia or elsewhere in Europe who are maybe looking longer term to get their big move to one of the top five leagues. And of course, there is a little Belgian connection with Atletico as well, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just think of how many of the top players in the game had at least some experience, their formative stages in the Belgian league, and are still playing in the Belgian national team today. Yannick Carrasco, Axel Witsel are examples of what we're talking about for this particular game. But it's a league with a lot of exciting young talent, has been for years. And the team Atletico are facing on Tuesday might be the cream of the crop right now in the Belgian league. Scott, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it'd be fair to say that Club Brugge are the top side in Belgian football at the moment. I think Anderlecht fans might want to pick a fight with me over that. historically, I suppose Anderlecht are probably the biggest side in Belgian football, but certainly in recent years, Club Brugge have become the top club. Anderlecht haven't won the title now for 6 years. And haven't had a great start to this season either. Club Brugge, on the other hand, have started as strongly as I think everyone expected them to. They're currently sitting third in the table at the moment, on 22 points, 5 points behind leaders Antwerp, who've had an unbelievable start to the season. In fact, they were actually playing earlier on this evening, Antwerp, and we're looking for their 10th straight win since the season started. But Club Brugge fans will be delighted to have discovered in the last 10-15 minutes actually that Antwerp lost this evening, so the gap's only 5 points now, and we're just under a third of the way through the season here in Belgium now. So, you know, it's still quite early, but Club Brugge are sitting in a great position. They've won 6 of their last 7. Won seven out of 10 of the league games so far. So, you know, they're on, you know, really pretty good form at the moment.
Their form just seems out of this world. And in the Champions League, their last time out in Portugal against Porto, that's a tough place to go. They won 4-0. Just beat the stuffing out of Porto. And now they are currently top of the group in addition to this great start to the league season, as you've talked about. Who are some of the key players that we need to keep an eye on? Who are some of the top names that are behind this sensational start?
Well, there's quite a few names we could mention, but I think it's worth mentioning Simon Mignolet, club's goalkeeper. He's very important to them. The sort of player who, you know, often produces his best football in big games that they need to win. And that they need to do well in. I think in terms of sort of outfield players to definitely look out for, Ferran Jugla, young Spanish striker, 23 now, came to Club Brugge just this summer, actually. He's got 6 goals in 10 games so far in the Pro League in Belgium, and he's got 3 assists on top of that. But if you include his Champions League goal and his goal in the Belgian Super Cup, he's actually got 7 and 13 across all competitions. So he's had an extremely good start to his Club Brugge career. He's worth watching out for. He's a very creative, tricky striker who's lots of different facets to his game. Quite small, diminutive in stature. I don't really like comparing players to other players, but there's a Messi-like quality to his physicality and his generally low centre of gravity, which can make him very kind of tricky to deal with. And he's one of those strikers who's quite instinctive. He will shoot on sight. He doesn't tend to mess about or overplay things too much. Other players worth highlighting: Danish winger Andreas Skov Olsen. He's had a really good start to his Club Brugge career as well. He's got 4 goals already this season, 4 and 10. You know, so he's playing pretty well, and he's a top provider. So he's somebody to watch out for. Others worth mentioning who are very important to the side and could play a big part in the game this week are Hans Van Aken, who's a bit of a Club Brugge legend. He spent most of his career actually at Club Brugge, just signed a new contract a few weeks ago, so it looks like he's going to see out the remaining 3 or 4 years of his career at Club. You know, complete legend at the club. There was a small chance he was going to leave this summer and go to West Ham, but it didn't quite happen. Others worth mentioning, big players, Clinton Mata, centre-back, very reliable, very physical, good pace in him, good all-round modern centre-half, you know, good at playing the ball out, positionally good, very difficult for a lot of strikers or wingers to get the ball better of Clinton. You know what I mean? He sticks to you like glue. He's a great defender. Why he's still at Club Brugge is perhaps a bigger question. Why he hasn't got his big move yet is a bit of a mystery to lots of us. But you know, thankfully for Club Brugge fans and certainly for us who watch a lot of Belgian football, he's still there. And 2 others worthy of mention: Kasper Nielsen, who came to the club this summer. He was a big signing, really good central midfielder who's come to the club from Union Saint-Gilloise, who almost won the title with Union Saint-Gilloise last year before just being pipped by none other than Club Brugge. And the other one worth mentioning, because I think we probably will see some of them at some point in the game this week, is Ukrainian striker Roman Yaremchuk, who's particularly interesting not only because he has a long history and connection with Belgian football, having previously played for Ghent. Club Brugge signed him this summer for a record Belgian transfer fee of €19 million. So I think they played about €16 million up front, and then there's €3 million in add-ons. So he is currently holds the transfer record in Belgium, and that was an incredible fee for Club Brugge to pay.
Yeah.
Particularly considering he's not actually been starting games since he came in. He's very much second choice to Ferran Yücla at the moment. He's only started 1 game so far since he's come to Brugge, Yaremchuk, and they actually lost that game. Not that it was Roman's fault, but I don't think that's going to help him kind of usurp Ferran Yücla, who's very much the first choice striker at the moment. But I do suspect we'll see Roman Yaremchuk at some point during the game this week.
Yeah, Yücla in particular was a transfer that caught my eye, because I watched him a bit at Barcelona last year. There was some talk in Spanish football circles that, well, maybe he could be registered for Barca's first team, maybe he's someone who could have a future there. But instead, he gets this move for €6-7 million, and he's been in great form. It seems like this is a team laden with quite a bit of talent, not just by Belgian Pro League standards, but they've been competing, in especially this season, they've been competing pretty well in the Champions League. They're currently top the group. Talk to me a little bit about the style of play, and I also understand they have a new coach in place, certainly relative to the last time these two teams met, Brugge and Atletico. But talk to me about the style of play that the new coach, Carl Hopkins, is implementing.
Well, I think the first thing to say about Carl Hopkins is he's been at Brugge quite a long time. He's been there since 2018. Mm. He's held a number of roles at the club. Obviously, he used to play for the club as well, for anyone who doesn't know. He was a defender in his playing career, 127 appearances for Club Brugge as a centre-half. During his playing career between 2009 and 2013, he then left and went off to kind of coach with some other clubs for a little while after retiring as a player, and then came back to Club Brugge in 2018 and became you know, senior coach with the under-18s and then the under-21 side at Bruges before becoming what we in Belgium call a T2. To anyone else, that's the assistant manager, but in Belgium it's the T1 and the T2. So he's been T2 to the two previous managers. So that's Alfred Schreuder, who's now at Ajax, mm-hmm. of course, spent the 6 months at Bruges from last winter, the second half of the season, and he managed to usurp Union Saint-Gilloise, win the title for kind of Club Bruges before going to Ajax, which was no surprise. It was a bit of an open secret. He wasn't going to be there terribly long and go back to Ajax, where, you know, he'd spent a large part of his career. Of course, he was an assistant to Ronald Koeman while he was at Barcelona Schreuder. And then he was also T2 to the T1 before that, Philippe Clément, who left to go to Monaco. Of course, he got his big move to Monaco. But the interesting thing about Club, just to put, you know, domestically them in context for you a little bit, they've won 5 of the last 7 titles in Belgium, and their title last year was their 3rd in a row, which is the first time they've won 3 titles in a row since the late 1970s under the legendary Ernst Happel. So
yeah,
they are by and large dominating Belgian football at the moment. There's a reason for this, and it's a combination of repeated automatic qualification for the Champions League and the guaranteed £40 to £45 million that goes with simply qualifying for the group stage, and being very, very good in the transfer market in terms of the value they bring in on their sales. They lost Charles de Ketelaar in the summer, which mm-hmm. wasn't unexpected. One of the hottest prospects in European football. He went to Milan for 30 million. So, you know, before anything had really even happened transfer-wise this summer, Club Bruges had guaranteed 70 million between their Champions League qualification and the sale of de Ketelaar as well. Bufkins is interesting because, you know, he's won 10 of the 13 games he's been T1 for so far, you know, if you include the Champions League games and the Belgian Super Cup, which the curtain raiser game before the season starts. So he started very, very well. I don't think there were going to be many head coaches who'll be unhappy with, you know, 10 wins out of 13 so far.
Pretty good.
And I think there's an expectation that he was going to get his shot at becoming T1, coming through the ranks. There was a little bit of surprise in Belgium that they didn't look outside, but I think the club's plan, because they probably knew that Schreuder was leaving, it wasn't a shock to them that they'd had a good number of months to have a look at this and decide whether they wanted to promote from within, which is what they do. He's very well liked and highly rated by the club and valued, and I think that had a big factor in him, you know, becoming T1.
You mentioned de Ketelaar a moment ago, really unique talent, you know, star in the making, definitely a star on the rise. But I think it speaks to a pretty well-run club that they were able to invest that money wisely. That's a big transfer fee for the Belgian league, 30 million plus. He had his choice of clubs between Leeds and Milan. He went to Milan, which can't really blame him for doing that. There's a lot of history at that club. But at Bruges as well, this is one of the largest clubs in Belgium, very well supported. They're the only Belgian club, I think, to make a European Cup final way back in the 70s. And it looks like they're on course for, I don't want to use the word dynastic, but they've won a bunch of titles recently. And they are, along with Anderlecht, one of the biggest clubs in the country. What's the support like in the country? What's the perception of Club Bruges, and what's the match day experience like at Jan Breidel Stadium?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting this, because I think if you asked a supporter of any club other than Club Bruges, I think you probably wouldn't get a very warm answer to what do they think of Bruges.
Perhaps
I think it's the same story you see with any side who tend to dominate football in a particular country. They're not particularly well liked by anyone other than their own fans. I think what I was saying earlier about the really strong financial position they're in, which has pushed them ahead of a lot of their challengers, is very important here. That's allowed them to keep them ahead of the likes of Genk, who financially are in a very strong position, Standard Liège, another big Belgian club, who are not in a great position at the moment, but have started this process of regeneration, which is still in its early days. So they're not in a position to challenge club at the moment, but they would aim to over the next few years. Other clubs as well, like Ghent, another big club in Belgian football, they're not able to compete financially, but are arguably getting closer. But at the moment, it looks like the main challenge to Club Brugge this year is going to come from Antwerp, who are flying at the top of the table, albeit they lost this evening. At the moment, certainly, it's looking like it's going to be between Club Brugge and Antwerp, but a few Genk fans, of which are Joris here at the Belgian Football Podcast. He's a Genk fan. Joris might have quite a bit to say about that. What we don't know yet is whether Genk can sustain a challenge, because we have a rather unique and interesting playoff system in Belgian football, which kicks in after 34 games. So we'll see where everyone is after that point. But at the moment, the favourites, I think are Club Brugge and Antwerp, with the added caveat of, you know, can Genk disrupt Bruges' kind of hegemony at the top of Belgian football. I think as far as European football is concerned, and the Champions League in particular, what's really interesting about the tie this week is there were quite modest expectations, if you like, from Club Brugge and from Belgian football watchers kind of going into European football this season. I think the minimum expectation was, look, let's try and finish third in the group so that at least we're guaranteed, you know, Europa League football. Mm-hmm. But the way that the group has started has exceeded everyone's expectations. There was a hope they would get a win at home against Leverkusen, which they managed to do. And then the really big surprise was that really emphatic win in Porto, you know, where they were able to win 4-0 and played Porto off the park for the majority of that game. Nobody quite saw that coming, and that's been a tremendous shot in the arm to Club Brugge and to Belgian football. The Belgian coefficient has taken a bit of a hammering over the last couple of years, but this year in Europe, the first couple of rounds of games across all competitions have seen the Belgian sides actually performing very well. So for a number of reasons, things are looking up in terms of the coefficient in Belgian football, and they've given themselves, and this is the exciting thing from club and Belgian football's perspective, they've given themselves a really strong platform now to potentially, and this is just my own view, but to potentially go and win the group now. You know, the expectations have to have changed, I think, you know, coming off the back of those two victories. Obviously, everything can still change. It's still early, but, you know, there's no reason now why, with a home game this week against Atletico, that they can't, particularly if they can win this game this week, then they're going to be in an unbelievably good position to go and win the group. And I think, you know, psychologically, they have to try and look at it like that, I think, because I think it's very dangerous if you try and, you know, play things down. I think, you know, exceeding expectations so far comes with greater expectations, and I think, you know, you have to see how the players respond to that. We have to remember they started their European campaign last year very well before it all really fell away rather depressingly. This year it started even better. So I think one of the lessons from that is to, you know, not necessarily fear anybody. And I think going into this game before the first two games, I think probably a lot of Club Brugge fans would have feared the next couple of games coming up, but certainly I don't think they need to now. I think there's a little bit more pressure going into this on Atletico than there is Brugge.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Atletico's start to the group stage has not been particularly encouraging. This is a team that has struggled in European football in recent years, only 6 wins from the past 21 games in Europe, coming off a loss a deflating loss in Germany to Bayer Leverkusen. Still several players in defense and midfield unavailable. We're waiting to see if Rodrigo De Paul can play, if Tomale Ma can play. But Axel Witsel and Yannick Carrasco will play in this game, Scott. Two longtime Belgian internationals, especially Axel Witsel, who's been in and around the national team for the last 15 years, give or take. What's the perception of those two players in particular among Belgian football watchers and among Belgian media? How are they regarded? How well-liked are they, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it?
I think there's a lot of fondness for both Axel and Yannick. I think there's a general kind of agreement, probably, that they're both past their best. But I think they both still have a lot to offer. They will both go to the World Cup with the Red Devils. There's no doubt about that. They will have a last hurrah, a major tournament. I'm a particularly big fan of Axel Witsel in particular. I think he is, and I'm going to use a footballing cliche here, but he is absolutely a Rolls Royce of a player. You know, he's a beautiful footballer. And I think Diego Simeone was very shrewd in bringing him in recently, the way that he did. And of course, it was through that personal phone call that he made very late on that persuaded Axel to go to Madrid, because he was very, very close on a deal with Marseille, which was dragging on a little bit. Diego Simeone picks up the phone and basically says, look, I'm a big fan, you know, come to Atletico, you'll play, you'll have a great time. And that's what he did. I mean, I think there was a slight hope within some quarters in the Belgian media, particularly Standard Liège fans, because he's a huge figure in Standard Liège's history, of course. They're the club that effectively made him who he is. He has tremendous affection for the club as well, put some money into the club as well, you know, has a lot of very good contacts still there and within the city of Liège itself. That you know, he might come back to Belgium for the last 2 or 3 years of his career and play somewhere. But I think he was very honest early on when his Dortmund contract was ending and said that he felt he was able to play a really top club. And when he said that, I think everybody knew he meant he wanted to stay in one of the top five leagues. Although he hasn't completely ruled out coming back to Belgium, so there is a possibility that he might get 1 year right at the end of his career back in Belgium, because funnily enough, a lot of big hitters, Toby Alderweireld and Jan Vertonghen, for example, have come back to Belgium this summer, and are now with Antwerp and Anderlecht, and that's great for everyone in Belgian football. But yeah, they're both highly rated. Some people, I think, would prefer some younger stars on the rise, perhaps, to be playing in their place. But I think Roberto Martinez, I think, is going to favour that quality and that experience ahead of perhaps playing some younger talent who arguably should be starting ahead of them. Both are great players, and I expect them both to go to Qatar and to start, to be automatic starters, really, for the Red Devils, and a group that they're expected to win, of course.
Witsel, in particular, has been a bit of a pleasant surprise. I think his signing from the Atletico point of view was met not with skepticism, but it wasn't viewed as a star signing, a flashy move on a free transfer. He's in his mid-30s. He obviously had the Achilles injury a year and a half ago. There is a bit of hesitation to kind of declare it a really smart or a shrewd signing, but he's been excellent so far. He's barely put a foot wrong, and he's been playing mostly in central defense because of all the injuries Atletico have had, and his reading of the game, his intelligence, positioning, his on-ball, his passing range, his on-ball ability is what we've been sorely missing in central defense, and he played in midfield yesterday against Sevilla and completed 95% of his passes. His vision and his positioning and his intelligence, just those are all qualities we have been missing for years, since the days of Thiago Mendes and Rodri, arguably. So really nice to have him. I wish we would have gotten him 5 years earlier when he was still in his 20s. But we are very happy with him. We hope he extends his contract for another year or so, but it would make sense if he went back to Standard Liège for a year or two at the end of his career. He came up there. He's obviously well-traveled. That would be a nice storybook ending for his career to go back to Belgium. And Carrasco, we know, as a really kind of volatile, explosive player, a bit inconsistent, but when he's on form, there aren't very many better players than him, especially given his versatility. I expect we're going to see him as an out-and-out winger in this game, as Atletico have reverted to the 4-4-2 after playing a 3-5-2 for most of the past couple of seasons. But given we have several players injured or out of form, who are just kind of coming back into the team. We'll see what the squad looks like on Tuesday for this game in Belgium. But how do you think it's going to go, Scott, if you were willing to hazard a prediction?
Well, Bruges tend to play on the front foot at home, as all sides should when they're at home, and like to try and kind of dominate the ball. I think they would take a point out of this game quite happily. I don't think they would be unhappy with that, but I think the outcome of the game this week, I think, has a little bit more to do with how Atletico might approach it, to be honest. If they feel they need to force the issue a little bit, then that could suit Rouge. I think they've played themselves into a lot of games, with the exception of the Porto game, where they you know, kind of came out of the traps very early. The first game against Leverkusen, you know, kind of started quite slowly for them, and they tend to start a lot of games like that, Club Brugge. Do you know what I mean? They're often stronger. For example, something to look out for in particular in this game is they're often stronger in the second half than they are in the first half, which is just something that, you know, I think it's not unique to the club, but it's not new. This isn't something that we've seen under Carl Hopkins. Often, their second half are noticeably stronger than their first half. So they do, I think they like to feel out the opposition and make tactical tweaks as things go. They're quite pragmatic in that sense. Mm. But their fans will expect them to come out and have a go. There'll be a full house at the Jan Breidel, and the away supporters tend to get kind of quite a hostile reception traditionally from home fans. And it's just interesting them going into this game off the back of two wins as well, how that might change the dynamic of this game as well. I think they're likely to play with less trepidation than they would if they'd come into this game under slightly different circumstances. So although they're going into it with confidence, I think Atletico are probably marginally still favourites, I would say. And I think are probably still favourites to do well in this group, albeit there's a long way to go yet. But mm-hmm. I think if Bruges can get the 3 points this week, then I think there's an extremely good chance that they will end up winning the group. Likewise, Athletic will be thinking exactly the same thing. Often with Champions League football, it's all about that central doubleheader and how that goes. And it's just a nice position for Club Bruges to be in, to go into it and you know, such positive form.
Yeah, I would agree. If Club Brugge win this game, they are, to me, immense favorites to win the group, even with the second half of that doubleheader in Madrid coming up in a couple weeks' time. With Atletico, we're not really sure what we're going to get. This has been a very inconsistent team to start this season, kind of alternating really explosive, really good performances with really bad ones. So we're not sure what kind of team we're going to get in Brugge. And Atleti also are known to kind of start games slowly, and it's sort of a feeling out phase. Simeone is an extremely pragmatic manager, has been for a long time. It's one of the reasons why he's had such longevity on the Atletico touchline. So I wonder if we're not going to get some second half fireworks, especially with the players who might be on Atletico's bench. Simeone is spoiled for choice, really, when it comes to the forward positions. João Felix, Matheus Cunha, Angel Correa, Antoine Griezmann, Alvaro Morata, who scored at the weekend in the win over Sevilla. It really depends on who's available. We still have four or five players who could be in contention, who could not be, and it really depends on, will Simeone repeat the formula that worked against Sevilla for this game? Will he change tack entirely? We're not really sure yet. Atletico used to be pretty predictable in this sense. You would know what the team was. You would know who the key players were. You would generally have an idea of what was going to happen and how Atletico were going to come out and play. Now it could be anyone's guess. We could fly out the traps, or it could be very pragmatic and then goalless, which Atletico probably would not be thrilled with that result. It would still put Club Brugge in a really good position to take one of the top two spots in the group. So I'm excited for this game, Scott. It really could go either way, given Atletico's form. Club Brugge have been a lot more consistent to begin this season, but I think Atletico do have the talent and the quality and the experience advantage, but I'm excited for this game. It could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of the definitely to watch games. this week in the Champions League. There's no doubt about it. The circumstances have set this game up kind of very nicely indeed, I think. Yeah.
Well, Scott, this has been a wonderful talk. Thank you so much for hopping on the show today. Anything else you you want to let our listeners know about your show?
Yeah, well, you can find us if you search for the Belgian Football Podcast. You can obviously find us on Twitter as well at Belgian Podcast. We've got a weekly show that covers all the latest news and action across all of the Belgian football landscape. And we like to throw in special extra episodes as often as we can, where we get guests on from inside the world of Belgian football, people from inside clubs, to delve a bit deeper into what's going on inside the Belgian football landscape as well. Alternatively, you can find me on Twitter at Scott_Coyne or at Coyne Consultant, which is my own freelance independent Belgian football consultancy as well. I do some work for players and agents and in the media via that, as well as my work with the Belgian Football Podcast.
Very good, Scott. Very cool. Thank you again for coming on the show today. You can find Belgian Podcast on Twitter. Go listen to their show. As usual, keep up with our work at Into the Calderon and intothecalderon.com. Colchonero Chat Amigos, get bonus content at patreon.com/colchonerochat. Make sure you subscribe to the Atletico Madrid Podcast Network on Spotify. That's it for now. We will be back in midweek to review this game. We're hoping for a good result for Atletico on our side. And until next time, adios.